On to our next philosopher, Seneca. Consolation for frustration. 13 years before he painted the death of Socrates, Jacques-Louis David attended to another ancient philosopher who met his end with extraordinary calm amidst the hysterical tears of his friends and family. The death of Seneca depicted the Stoic philosopher's last moments in a villa outside Rome in April 65 AD. A centurion had arrived at the house a few hours before with instructions from the emperor that Seneca should take his own life forthwith. A conspiracy had been discovered to remove the 28-year-old Nero from the throne, and the emperor, maniacal and unbridled, was seeking indiscriminate revenge. Though there was no evidence to link Seneca to the conspiracy, though he'd worked as the imperial tutor for 5 years and as a loyal aide for a decade, Nero ordered the death for good measure. He had, by this point, already murdered his half-brother Britannicus, his mother Agrippina, and his wife Octavia. Nero had disposed of a large number of senators and equestrians by feeding them to crocodiles and lions, and he'd sung while Rome had burnt to the ground in the great fire of 64. When they learnt of Nero's command, Seneca's companions began to weep, but the philosopher, in the account provided by Tacitus, remained unperturbed and strove to check their tears. Where had their philosophy gone, he asked, and that resolution against impending misfortunes which they'd encouraged in each other over so many years? Seneca turned to his wife, Paulina, embraced her tenderly, and asked her to take consolation in his well-spent life. But she couldn't countenance an existence without him, and asked to be allowed to cut her veins in turn. Seneca didn't deny her wish, but when the emperor's guards noticed that Paulina had taken a knife to her veins, they seized it against her will and bandaged up her wrists. Nero had no wish to increase his reputation as a cruel tyrant. This tragic end was no one-off, sadly for Seneca. Throughout his life, he'd witnessed and been party to exceptional disasters. Earthquakes had shattered Pompeii, Rome and Lugdunum had burnt to the ground. The people of Rome and her empire had been subjected to Nero, and before him Caligula, or as Suetonius had more accurately termed him, the monster. Seneca had suffered grievous personal losses too. He had trained for a career in politics, but in his early 20s had succumbed to a suspected tuberculosis, which had lasted 6 years and led to suicidal depression. Seneca's late entry into politics had unfortunately coincided with Caligula's rise to power. Even after the monster's murder in 41, Seneca's position had been precarious. A plot by the Empress Messalina had, through no fault of Seneca's, resulted in his disgrace and 8 years of exile on the island of Corsica. When he'd finally been recalled to Rome, it had been to take on, against his will, the most fateful job in the imperial administration, tutor to Nero, the man who would, 15 years later, order him to kill himself in front of his wife and family. Seneca knew why he'd been able to withstand all these anxieties, all these frustrations. "I owe my life to philosophy," he said, "and that's the least of my obligations to it." Seneca's experiences had taught him a veritable dictionary of frustration, his intellect a series of responses to them. Years of philosophy had prepared him for the catastrophic day Nero's centurions had struck at the villa door. A single idea really recurs throughout Seneca's work, and that is that we best endure any frustration which we've prepared ourselves for and understand, and are hurt most by the frustration we least expected and can't understand. Philosophy must therefore reconcile us to the true dimensions of reality, and so spare us, if not frustration itself, then at least its panoply of pernicious accompanying emotions. Rage, self-pity, bitterness. Philosophy's task is to prepare for our wishes the softest landing possible on the adamantine wall of reality. Take anger, which the philosopher held to be a kind of madness. Now, in calm moments, people who get very angry tend to apologize and explain that they were overwhelmed by a power stronger than their reason. They appeal to a view of the mind in which the reasoning faculty, the seat of the true self, is depicted as occasionally assaulted by passionate feelings, which reason neither identifies with nor can be held fully responsible for. This runs directly counter to Seneca's view of the mind. He held that anger resulted not from an uncontrollable eruption of the passions, but from a basic and correctable error of reasoning.